I'd like you to imagine that you have slaved away for hours in the kitchen. You've looked at all of your cookbooks. You've come up with the perfect meal for some guests that are coming over that evening. They take part in that meal after all the work you've done, and no one seems to say anything about it. So before your guests leave, you ask them, "So what'd you think about the meal?" And they reply, "Well, it was ordinary." How would you feel? Or say you've worked hard on a presentation for school or for work and you've just invested a lot of intellectual strength in this. You've sweated it out. You've pored over your books. You've come up with what you think is the right presentation for the right time. And then after you present it, your boss or your teacher says, "Oh, that was quite common." Or you are a guest at church. And as you're passing through the line and greeting the pastor asks you in a fit of anxiety, "So what'd you think of the service or the sermon?" And the person says, "Well, it was quite average." It's not the response we are generally looking for. We're looking for something like, "Awesome, that was great, I've never had any meal like this, that was a wonderful presentation." We prefer some extreme expressions for all the work that we put into things. Ordinary for us seems like such a letdown. And yet ordinary is so much of our lives, particularly when it comes to faith in God, because we're in a season called ordinary time. And yet we live in a culture that is addicted to the spectacle, to the extreme, to things that are very, very radical. In fact, in the last handful of years, one of the biggest hits in Christian publishing has been all the radical books that are out there. There's a whole series of articles that have been written about books like Radical Faith, Radical Mission, Radical Church. And the idea purported by great authors and very godly people like David Platt, Francis Chan, Shane Claiborne, is that Christians are just too ordinary, just a little bit too comfortable, and they need to be called to extreme expressions because Jesus is so radical. And so when you read these books, and I have, you read stories of people who leave the suburbs and they move into the slums, or they adopt orphans from Ethiopia, or they go on these dangerous mission trips, or they get caught up in activism and end up getting jailed for that. And all the stories are exciting and dramatic. They're not mundane or ordinary. But there may be a problem with focusing only on the radical. I'm sure that the radicals mean no harm. They mean great good. They want justice. They want change. They want complacent Christians pushed out of comfort zones into places of suffering. There can't be much wrong with that, except there also can be. Because it's certainly not the whole truth. It ignores a very important component of our life, which the church calendar recognizes, and that is ordinary time. The new radicals and their vision has a potential to leave ordinary Christians doing ordinary common duties, feeling like they're lazy, useless servants, because they're not involved in these extreme and dramatic and radical works. But what you don't find in their books are stories of people who get up at 4 to 6 a.m. in the morning, 6 days a week, and work 8 to 10 hours a day just merely to pay the bills and put food on the table. But that certainly can be an expression of faith. They don't have stories of parents whose day consists of changing endless diapers and scrubbing pee out of the carpets and wiping up vomit from the kitchen floor. They don't have stories of people visiting shut-ins or the sick or cooking meals for loved ones that are going through a hard time. And they certainly have no stories of leisure and joy in the presence of family and friends. The reason why, all those things seem so ordinary. And that's where our church calendar is a great help to us, even though we might not recognize the gift it gives to us. It gives us this gift of a very long season. In fact, the longest season we have in our church year, almost fully 6 months of ordinary time, where we celebrate God in the ordinary, which means there are no more big dramatic expressions. Christmas is over. Easter is over. The big two are gone. Things like Pentecost and Ascension, they're also past us. Even Lent, which we all muddle through, is gone. All the big seasons that we're most known for are gone, and now we just have this long expanse of ordinary Sundays. How was that meal? Ordinary. How was that presentation? Common. How was that sermon? Average. Those all sound so petty, so pedestrian, and yet we are now in ordinary time. Who wants to be ordinary when you can be a radical? And that's where I suggest that if we're to make the most of ordinary time in the months ahead of us, we need to rethink the ordinary. We need to rethink how special the ordinary actually is. Now, when you look at the dictionary definition of ordinary, you will find that the chief definition is ordinary has no special or distinctive features. It's rather commonplace, which is the opposite of extraordinary. But when you look deeper into the idea of ordinary time, it comes from the root word ordinal. Ordinal has to do with having an order, having a structure, having a routine. So that ordinary also speaks of those normal rhythms and routines and customs that comprise our lives. The rhythms that we often take for granted, that we can't think about when we're asked, what is happiness? Well, we forget daily meals and a place to live and friends to love. These rhythms are normal for us. And the radicals are right. Those rhythms can become ruts. They can just become ruts that we get stuck in, but rhythms can also be the ordered way in which we live a sustained, disciplined, faithful life. You can't be spontaneous forever. The ordinary is by no means petty, small, or irrelevant. That's why I asked the kids, you know, what happens if you lose the ordinary? If you lose the ordinary, you'll realize how special it really was. Ask someone who's been in a tragedy like the Boston bombing, and they'll tell you that ordinary was so special. Ask someone who's experienced a natural disaster and all of their resources have been wiped out by a tornado or a hurricane, and you'll hear how special ordinary is. Ask someone who's lying in a sickbed or perhaps near death, and they'll tell you how special those ordinary times really are. There's a play called Our Town. And in Our Town, Emily, the main character, dies, but she's given a possibility of spending a day among the living one last time. She can at least observe. And she picks not an extraordinary day, she picks a very ordinary day. And as she goes about on that ordinary day, watching all of her family and friends doing their ordinary things, she realizes how deeply special it is. And she pleads with the people who can't hear her to recognize how special and wonderful and magnificent the ordinary rhythms of their lives are, and yet the family continues to go about blind to that beauty. If you were to ask me the same question that Emily gets asked, do you want to go back and revisit a day? The most extraordinary day of my life, the day I will never forget because it was off the charts awesome, was not my wedding day. I've talked to my wife about this. This is not because she's not here. I'll say this at second service too. It's not my wedding day. It was not the birth of my children. It was front row seats to Dream Theater. I'll never forget that. Everyone should see their favorite band from the front row. I was at the stage, just like this, with a smile from ear to ear for 2 hours straight. Literally could put my hand up and almost touch John Petrucci, the guitarist. I was constantly looking at Mike Portnoy, the drummer. I could look and see. It literally was the most magnificent experience of my life. Oh, just thinking about it, it was awesome. Everyone should get to see something like that. But if you were to ask me to revisit one day, it wouldn't be that day. Because that was an awesome day. But I'd probably revisit what my wife and I call lazy Saturdays. I'd probably come back on a lazy Saturday when we got nothing to do, when we can just be together and enjoy the passing of time, the simple things in life, the things that I find are so precious. I can go my entire life without seeing Dream Theater from the front seat, but I can't go my entire life without those things. Those are what are most special and precious. When I think of that in the context of worship, I've been to thousands of worship services. I've done this professionally for 23 years, and before that I was just a parishioner, not just a parishioner, but I was a parishioner for years as well. So, yeah, sorry about that. So ordinary, huh? I'm sorry about that. But I went to thousands. I love church services. I enjoy most of them, even the ones that are just okay. And having been to thousands of services, the one that if I had to go back to and spend time at again is clear to me. My favorite services are Good Friday and Easter Sundays. Those are extraordinary. They're spectacles. They're blow off the roof wonderful. But if I could go back to one, it would be the day that I don't know what I preached. I don't know what else went on. But I remember it was Terry's last Sunday with us, with her mask on, having communion, sitting up in the front row with Bill, and people passing by and showering her with love and affection and care and kindness. It was the holiest moment I've ever experienced in any church service anywhere. And it was so ordinary. I mean, it was just, you know, the same stuff we do week in, week out. It was communion, it was a sermon, it was a few songs, a few prayers. But there was something about it that was so sacred and so undeniably special. And if I had only been a Christmas and Easter Christian and only come on the big spectacles, I would have missed the single most holy moment I've ever had in a worship service in my life. And that's all to say that if we can't find God in the ordinary, we won't find God at all. Because the fumes of drama, the fumes of awesome, they leak after a while. And that's why ordinary time confronts us with the challenge, where's God right now in your life? After Easter, after Pentecost, after Trinity Sunday, as you go through the ordinary rhythms of time. Jan Johnson writes this. She says, where is God speaking if not in this day? Where does God come to us if not in our ordinary lives? And how does God come to us if not through the things happening in our earthly existence? So if we are to welcome the God who comes, we must learn to welcome all the events and experiences of the day and examine them for signs of God's presence. That's where I think that we get a half-truth with the radicals. They're helpful. We need a voice every now and then to break us out of our complacency, to keep us from the ruts. But rhythm is part and parcel of the norm and the ordinary movements of life. Those ordinary movements are the stuff of a long obedience in the same direction. And the unintended consequence of a focus on the radical may be that we fail to see God in the ordinary. I'd actually argue that we all ought to have radical faith. But radical faith isn't radical if it doesn't include the mundane, if it doesn't include the whole of life. This is why a woman named Andrea Palpant Dilley wrote in response to the radicals in her book Faith in Flat Tires. I like that. She says, we all need each other and we need to serve in all spaces, both the suburban kitchen and the urban slums. With that in mind, I don't denigrate the core vision of the new radicals, challenging suburbanite Christians in particular to engage the greater good in both a global and inner city context. I simply want to expand their vision to include the moms and dads who serve day in and day out on the domestic front. I want to praise them just as they are, changing the world one diaper at a time, because suburbia needs Jesus too. I think her vision is in accord with the vision you see in Apostle Paul in 1 Thessalonians. Keep in mind, this is the radical Christian movement in its earliest stages. And he tells them, if you look at our passage in 1 Thessalonians, two things. In verse 9, love one another. Keep loving one another. Grow in love to one another. You can't do that except through the ordinary rhythms and routines of life. And then he says in verse 11 something I think that the new radicals would have a very hard time implementing into their system. He says, I want to aspire you to live quietly, to mind your own business, and to work with your hands, to live, to do the stuff of life, to make a way, to be someone who has a place in this world, someone who is living, if you will, not a radical life, but a very real life. That's why in closing, I'd like to suggest that I think the radicals could be helped quite a bit if they understood that what we really need are not radicals. We need, and you're going to initially resist this, but hear me out, we need mystics. The mystics are misunderstood as people who were into extreme expressions of faith and fireworks. They're not at all. Just read them. The mystics thought that people were immature if they needed all of their senses filled with the sense of God's presence. They're the ones that wrote The Dark Night of the Soul, that it's important to have faith even when you can't sense at all God's presence. You have no in any way contact or sense of God's blessing toward you at all. They understood that if you can't live life in the ordinary, in faith, you won't be able to live faith with a few extraordinary expressions. So being committed to that, they focused on finding God in the whole of life, the radical and the common. That's why you've heard me say this again and again. It's my favorite mystic quote of all time. Brother Lawrence, who was a cook in a kitchen and a sandal maker. That's a mystic. Making sandals, cooking food. And while he's cooking food, he says, it's not necessary to have great things to do. I turn my little omelet in the pan for the love of God. When it is finished, if I have nothing to do, I prostrate myself on the ground and adore my God who gave me the grace to make the omelet, after which I arise more content than a king. When I cannot do anything else, it's enough for me to have lifted a straw from the earth for the love of God. The littleness of the work does not lessen one bit the value of the offering, for God does not consider the greatness of the work, but the love that motivates doing it. So here's this great mystic, Brother Lawrence, and while he's cooking omelets, he's knowing God. And when he picks up a little trash from the ground, he recognizes that he's doing God's will. He's doing it from love of God. That's why one of our more known mystics, if you will, Mother Teresa, said it's not all of us can do great things, but we can do small things with great love. The reason why she says that is found in 2 Corinthians 4, verse 7, the last verse of our first reading. It's always important to keep in mind that the treasure that we have is in, do you see what's in? We have this treasure in clay jars. That's a way of saying the most ordinary, common cup you can think of. Actually, one way to interpret this is in cracked pots. We're a bunch of cracked pots, clay jars, the most common, most ordinary container you can imagine. And it's within the living of the ordinary as we are clay jars that the extraordinary power of God is unleashed in our world. We have a whole season. We have 6 months to wrestle with how we live the Easter faith of our lives throughout the ordinary rhythms of daily life. It's not always exciting or dramatic, but it can always be meaningful. It's not full of explosions, but it's the stuff of life. You could actually argue that ordinary time is where the true test of faith take place, because anyone can be a CNE Christian. Christmas and Easter, the biggies. It really is during the normal, ordinary rhythms of the church year that you find sometimes the deepest expressions of faith are found. I want to close with this. 10 years ago when I first got here, you allowed me and my wife and Bill and Terry to go to a national pastors conference in San Diego. We flew all the way out there, heard a lot of great speakers, but the speaker I remember most is Lauren Winter. Lauren Winter was speaking about marital relations. I'll make it as nice as I can. She was speaking about marital relationships, and I'm there with my wife watching this, and Lauren said something I'll never forget. She says, it's not during the times of immense passion, when things are fresh, new, and alive, and exciting, and spontaneous in two lovers' lives, when you see the pure metal of their love. It's not during those times at all, because anyone can experience that. She said, if you're able to keep a love alive in the normal routines of ordinary life, in the midst of chores, and laundry, and cooking, and taking the kids to their stuff, if you can keep a love alive in the midst of domesticity, in the midst of the ordinary, then you have love for a lifetime. You have the true kind of love that is bonding and intimate. And that's, to me, what ordinary time is about. It's easy to love God when we're celebrating the birth of the Christ, or the resurrection of the Christ, or the gift of the Spirit. But can we follow God, love Christ, when it's just another ordinary sermon, on a just another ordinary Sunday, when we're just going afterwards to have a very common meal? Can we do that? Can we settle into the ordinary and understand that it's just as special as the rest of the year, because God is there in the ordinary as well as the radical? Will you pray this prayers of the people with me as our response? You'll notice that some words are in bold, and those are the prayers I'd invite you to respond. Lord, that each of us will understand that our ordinary lives are pleasing to Christ, our King. Lord, in your mercy.
Hear our prayer.
that all leaders in government will realize that the ordinary people in our country are important. Lord, in your mercy, for all those people who are very ordinary but also are extraordinary because of the way they care for God's people, Lord, in your mercy. For people who are sick and unable to do the ordinary things they used to do, that they will be patient with themselves and with those who care for them, Lord, in your mercy. Father, hear our prayers and the prayers of all your people. Help us to be faithful in ordinary ways, loving and caring for your people whom we meet every day. We ask this through Jesus, your Son and our King. Amen.